This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Lana. Thanks for joining me for another hour of what I hope you think will be an interesting program. How could it not be, though, since Sophia Smallstorm is my guest? You probably know her for her research on 9/11, which culminated in her documentary 9/11 Mysteries, or her presentation on Sandy Hook, or perhaps for her analysis of chemtrails. Today we'll discuss the tools being used to create humanity 2.0. It sure would appear that there's a dark agenda to re-engineer humanity both physically and mentally. We'll talk about what some of these aspects the elite would find useful to change may be. Is humanity as we know it heading to the point of no return, or will we see a separation between humanity 1.0 and humanity 2.0? I sure think so. Stick around to hear more. Welcome, Sophia. It's a pleasure to finally speak with you. I really enjoy your videos and interviews.
Oh, gosh, you're welcome, and it's my pleasure. I love your interviews. I love your style, and especially that you're so upbeat in this world of doom and gloom.
Well, you were on Red Ice Radio last March, and it was around that time when we here at Red Ice Creations kind of had a deeper awakening into the agenda aimed at destroying specifically European folk. And we had all the loose pieces, but we never really thought about race before, and we missed the big glaring picture. So what has been your experience learning about the agenda to destroy white Europeans?
Well, I've been listening to the shows that you've been doing on Red Ice and reading things elsewhere on the internet. And it does seem that there is a population truncation going on in certain cultures, and we know that there's expansion going on in other cultures. And I believe that what is planned is a melding of all humans such that they devolve in terms of ethnicity and loyalties to any kind of inherited culture, nationality, but there may be certain folk, let's just call them the elite to be broad brush here, who retain their distinctiveness in terms of genetics, race, and such, and they thereby retain also, I spent some time learning about hybridization, and it was a shock to me, Lana. Apparently, you can do what's called first cross, and in that regard, you get a often superior creation if you compare it to the parents. For instance, you cross a horse and a donkey, and you get a mule, right?
Yep.
Now, most people don't know this, but ranchers and animal breeders do know that a mule is actually a superior animal to either the horse or the donkey.
Hmm.
It has a better intelligence. It learns much more rapidly. It's stubborn, which is part of its superiority in a sense. It's more sure-footed. It's a better performing animal. But, surprise, surprise, the mule is sterile. You can't breed mules with mules. In order to create mules, you always have to cross horses and donkeys. So nature puts a barricade on the crossing right there after the first cross. Humans, however, can go on and on and on with this hybridization and crossing of strains, let's call them. And the breeder person that was kind of teaching me about all this told me that when you keep crossing the crosses, you start having a devolution, almost a genetic confusion, a lowering of all kinds of qualities. And you get this mutt, really. You know, I mean, this is why mutts are lovable, but not very bright and so forth. So I don't want to be politically incorrect here, but this is why human, let's just call them strains, have kept their discrete qualities over the millennia until now. They have simply not crossed too many times. Now we have this multiculturalism, this globalization. And what's happening is we're getting this coffee-colored, no particular origin human folk who are being given a standardized culture as well, which includes lots of brands, you know, like Nike and McDonald's. And they don't really understand the perils of being generalized in this way.
I just want to interject something real quick for the audience. Here's the thing. Race mixing has always happened organically. People fall in love, especially between neighboring countries, and that's always going to happen. But the issue we're talking about is the constant genocidal push programming people via media, education, entertainment to race mix and have brown children, especially for whites. And they say, to stop racism, do it for peace, they say. The world will be better if you do. This we should all have an issue with, but if you're coffee colored, it's not a personal attack on you. If sides were reversed, I wouldn't expect or desire everyone else to look like me. Okay, sorry, continue, Sophia.
Well, sure, I understand that. I mean, I've been listening to the Red Eyes shows. I'm trying to explain the, I guess you could say the mechanics of it, that this actually occurs. In nature, there are barricades placed on mixing of species, I guess it is, but there's also the word genus, and I have to kind of do a little more research as to what is a species and what is a genus. They're actually, genuses are radically different. Species are more similar, you know, like you can cross a dachshund with a chihuahua, and you get something that they call a chewy. And I think that's what it's called, something like that. But it's a very cute dog. But anyway, this is alarming when you place it in the context of the formation of what's called, you know, the post-human society or humanity 2.0, some authors have called it. And they're trying to not only create this melding of culture and nationality and race, but they're also throwing out this advisory that we be proactionary in our decisions. In mm-hmm. other words, this I'm going to relate this to Angelina Jolie and her supposed double mastectomy, the BRCA gene that she claims to have, which puts her at risk for breast cancer. So then why not be proactive and cut your breasts off and get, you know, falsies, implants? And you're going to look the same. Nobody's going to know the difference, but you have protected yourself. So they want humans to do the same thing all across the board. They want us to make decisions that protect us. In other words, I did a newsletter on this recently, and I said here, first they made us too big by selling us cheap carbo junk, because now we've got a globesity problem, right? Global obesity. Now they want to minimize us. So futurists are actually working on the smaller, sleeker, greener versions of our bloated selves. And biotech is engineering chip-sized microhumans to replace the use of animals in laboratory testing. So they are doing these artificial microhumans. You can look at the Global Research, you know that website?
Yep.
There was an article on September 12th of this year by a Christina Sarich that was posted there. But they're developing artificial microhumans. They're called mini GM humans. And they hope that this will be out by 2017. And they want these mini humans to report back to us in on their how they are affected by drugs and various other things that are tested on them. So these GM humans will have smartphone-sized microchips in them that will be programmed to replicate up to 10 major human organs. And these humans are going to be the size of microchips themselves. But this is going to make all the people in the world go, yay, yay, now we don't have to experiment on animals. We'll just create human analogs with chips. I mean, it's very PC when you think about the animals, but what it really is they want us all to Keep in mind that we must have a tiny ecological footprint, each and every one of us, because there's this horrible stuff happening to the planet with climate change and, you know, the planet is dying and it's all our fault. And so we have to have this teeny weeny little ecological footprint. And we are all bloated and obese, so now we need to shrink down. So once they made us obese on their carbohydrates that they put in every 7-Eleven and sold to us on television from the time we were small children, right?
Yep.
Now they want us to start accepting really genetic modification to get us to be smaller. This is the proactionary principle.
Nothing about eating right or avoiding chemicals or living a natural lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. That's all called education. So this is, they want us to intensify our relationship with technology, to depend on it in all kinds of ways that make us proactionary. That what you're calling eating right and living more sensibly is called precautionary. So there's an actual debate between being precautionary or being proactionary. The proactionary position supports individuals taking risks. Like you could submit yourself to a clinical trial with a certain drug because you want to just see how it helps your condition. Even your potential condition. I think they're going to start using a whole new kind of diagnostics that are based on radiation and scans to tell us that we have this predisposition, this gene, and then they'll say, "Well, come, you know, in, and we'll give you treatments, which will be more more radiation and scans, and we will try to block the effect of these triggers that you have, these genes." And it just, and people will think it's all fantastic.
But these are also things that could cause cancer and kill people.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, just like race used to be a known fact, now PC scientists are saying, nah, it's just a social construct. I've been hearing the same thing when it comes to humanity lately. People are saying, what is human? What does it mean to be human anyway? Have you noticed that line being blurred nowadays?
Well, I know that people are telling me that they don't like humans, and they are human, and they prefer animals over humans, and they would much rather save the lives of animals than help any humans anywhere.
Yeah, well, I would say as humans, we're conscious of more than ourselves. We reason, we think about morality, we create cultures, we desire more. We possess emotion and spirituality, so being human is all these aspects, unless animals are also capable of these things.
Well, again, what kind of consciousness are we operating with, and what kind of consciousness are animals operating with? Animals really don't think about the future much, to my knowledge, and I've tested this, because if you go for a run on a beach where dogs are running loose, even if they see you coming, they cannot plan a change in their trajectory. They will simply run in the direction they're already running in, and you'll collide with them. You're the one that has to make the shift of direction. So that was my own personal experience, that animals don't really plan for the future. They don't take precautions unless it's instinctive and it's just kind of hammered into them, right? I mean, birds build nests and they, you know, make sure that they take care of their young in a certain way, which you could say was precautionary, but it's instinctively programmed. They don't think in the moment particularly, except in complete self-defense. So there's this, I think it came originally from Aldous Huxley, but what's happening in our human world is there is a definite push toward making what's called the Delta class, a Delta class of individuals. So the Alpha class, I guess I went online and I Googled Delta class, and I found this I guess it comes from psychology. Let me just go to my notes and see where it is exactly. Oh, yeah, the California Psychological Inventory. So alpha, beta, gamma, and delta personalities are terms that you find there. And this was apparently taken from Huxley and then integrated into the psychology world. So the alpha personality is enterprising, dependable, and outgoing. And that's what we're seeing a serious reduction in today among ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Betas are reserved, responsible, and moderate. Gammas are adventurous, restless, and pleasure-seeking. Deltas are withdrawn, private, and disaffected, almost like prisoners. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to identify a large swath of people who are, you know, beaten down and suffering. And they're going to, and that's how they want most of humanity to be. But in the phase toward that, they're going to assign all these bright, chipper, you could call them experts on the Delta. This is part of the whole mental health expansion now that we are seeing after Sandy Hook. They're going to have all these licensed experts who are going to counsel. They're going to have these, you know, bully police in the schools who are actually law enforcement officers on the lookout for bullies. And they're going to start drawing out children who have any kind of those traits that I mentioned in the beginning, enterprising, dependable, and outgoing. They want everybody like that who has initiative to be reduced into someone who has no initiative. And this is going to come to us through the mental health field. So, you know, they will assign bright and shiny experts who will be sound very confident. And in my newsletter, I wrote, to administer new technologies to help the swelling ranks of the failing deltas with their gargantuan problems of health, intellect, competence, achievement, ability to learn, procreate, feel good in general. A portion of the load will be on the deltas themselves, who will be energetically counseled to improve their capacity for status, social presence, flexibility, and psychological mindedness. This idea, buck up, you can do it. Remember Barack Obama, President Obama? Yes, we can.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole yes, we can energy will be deployed on the people. And the people will not be able to do anything because the deck is so heavily stacked against us. And this is another aspect of New Age that you can see through, I'm quite sure, and lots of people in our alternative thinking world. But New Age tells you just, you know, it's all good. Just everything is unfolding as it should. Yes, X, Y, and Z happened to you this year that were unexplainably horrific, but it's all the law of attraction. This is how your soul was meant to, you know, travel in this life. So from the colony of experts to the philosophy that we will be more and more steeped in, which is to accept destruction and calamity. And the experts will be saying, don't worry, you can do it. Just, you know, change your attitude. Think positive. We will be encouraged to take all this risk-taking really with ways to expand our life chances. And that will be the proactionary principle.
It's interesting. It's almost like they have seen that, okay, the human race is not altogether evolving into the same thing. They're like various group organisms on different evolutionary paths, but we need to change that. We need to make them into one group so they're evolving on the same path. You know what I mean?
Right. So that they're not even evolving, so that they're being standardized to all remain on the same path. Globalization, I learned from an interview, a couple of interviews done by Rosa Corey. She's an Agenda 21
sure.
specialist.
Yep.
Is standardization. You know, that's the equation that has to be made in the public mind. Wait, wait, wait. Standardization. And I had a discussion with a young woman who graduated from UCLA very recently. She's extremely bright. And she said, no, I like the multicultural trend. I think people should, you know, people are all different. They should celebrate their differences. I said, well, sure. But multiculturalism is about blending them, having them all live together and marry each other and ultimately make them all the same.
Yeah, it's killing diversity.
Yes, eradicate those differences. And she looked at me and she goes, oh my God, I never saw that. Now, literally in 1 minute, she flipped her view. And that was a worldview, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just certain distinctions that people are not seeing because of the barrage of propaganda that puts it one way. You know, and doesn't show you the underlying philosophies and principles that are at work. And it takes a mind that has the time to cogitate and reflect and compare. And we just don't have that time anymore.
So where does humanity 2.0 or transhumanism fit in with what we've been talking about?
Well, the humanity 2.0, transhumanism is the corridor into humanity 2.0. I don't know what humanity 1.0 actually was. I mean, how they define it. But this next age of humans will be married with machines and technology. And that, to me, encompasses everything from being dependent and in love with technology to actually having technological materials embedded in us to assist our own biological processes. And I believe we're going to start failing in horrendous ways biologically because we can't handle already what's happening to us. You know, we're not dying from bacterial infections anymore. We're dying from degenerative disease, which really translates into our bodies failing and falling apart system by system. Then you've got the whole collective system thing going where, you know, you could have just a complete crash. And, that's happening to people. And they're, look at how many medications they're being put on. Look at how many tests and anything just to diagnose them. I had a friend whose mother recently died in the hospital because they admitted her with stomach pain and they put a barrage of tests on her and she couldn't handle it.
Jeez. Yeah.
She was an old, fragile woman, and her body couldn't handle being intruded on and invaded in all these ways that included CAT scans, MRIs, all these radioactive materials that she had to drink. They put thallium in your heart, in your coronary arteries to see, that's radioactive, to see what shape they're in. I mean, people are constantly being irradiated and invaded, and when it happens, you know, all at once to someone who's very, very old, they sometimes can't take it. And the medical world will never say, oh, that was our fault. That was our mistake. We did it. We're very sorry. So the dependence on technology, the public falling in love with it to the degree that we have, and then our susceptibility and vulnerability to the brainwashing of experts. You know, the experts will tell you, do this. Like, for instance, you have cancer, so you have to have chemotherapy, otherwise you're going to die. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that in the last 12 months. Not to me, but this has been repeated to me by people around me who know people who've developed cancer, a diagnosis of cancer, okay, from the experts. So they just scare you, tell you you're going to die, you got to have this, and you take it, and what it does is it simply toxifies your entire body and another system will go. And then the allopathic world will say, oh, well, we can give you this drug trial or this transplant for this organ of yours that's gone dead on you. And they charge you. So, you know, it's kill you and bill you.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have to use that one. Well, I know we have listeners that are very pro transhumanism and then some that are really anti. And, you know, I'm for technology provided on a few factors. One, it doesn't cause cancer and it's made of non-toxic materials, which we obviously need to work on that area. And two, we don't become so dependent that we forget how to do the basic things needed for survival. And three, I am not for hooking up machine parts to the human body for vain reasons. But if it's safe, I think this could be useful for disabled people or for warfare. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the transhumanists will argue that eyeglasses are technology, hearing aids, prosthetic limbs, you know, screws and whatnot, bolts in your broken bones. And sure, but when you get to the point where you want nanobots in your body that march around your bloodstream and check on things and take over biological processes for you, that's when I think you don't know what you're getting into.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know that that will happen in our lifetime, but again, remember, transhumanism is the corridor to the post-human world. And the post-human world will be where humans are not Homo sapien anymore. And already we're transitioning. We have, if you look at the work of Clifford Carnicom, you'll see that he explains quite clearly that the three life domains, the kingdoms of life, eukaryotic, archaea, and bacteria, they have already been crossed in us, and we have material developing, and this is subcellular biology that is intermixed with technology. We have non-natural fibers in our bloodstream, and you can test for it. You can culture these just about out of anyone. So strange things are already happening, and most people are just blissfully unaware of it. And, you know, that's how you start introducing these enormous changes. You have to start with the substrates. You have to start in a very covert, very small, microscopic way.
Where do you think it's beginning first? Where are the tools that are really being used right now in this era to push for this 2.0?
Where are they coming from?
Yep.
Well, it's very clear that the chemtrail, the aerosol dispersion, the materials in these aerosols that are sprayed in the lower atmosphere, they are dropping all kinds of unwanted, unnatural materials on us that we are inadvertently and unwittingly absorbing and, again, adapting to the best we can, because that's the biological imperative, is adaptation. So I believe that, let's just say, the maestros of the technological world are forcing technologies into our very bodies without our knowledge and watching us grapple with the effects. And this is what I define as culling. You know, we are all living laboratories, as a very astute friend of mine pointed out some time ago. And that's cheap, to have a living, walking laboratory that you don't have to fund and you don't have to pay for, but you can observe. That's an absolute brainwave. So we are the living laboratories walking around with various conditions developing in each of us. Sometimes we get on forums and we report on them, and we're all on Facebook and we're all reporting the intimate details of our lives to everybody else, and seeing how many friends we can have that are interested in this. And so the observation process is key. And because of the, I'll just call them, assaults being levied on us from all directions, and will include vaccines, GMO, chemtrails, the social engineering, all of it, okay? Because of that, not all of us are going to thrive. And most of us are going to decline. This is tough. This is tough to deal with on a biological level. So we're already seeing our life expectancy drop. We're seeing, you know, our degenerative conditions rise. We are increasingly relying on big pharma and other kinds of industries to just help us out. And we are not thriving. So the question will be, how do populations survive this? Do they not? There are going to be numbers of us who ail and drop like flies, but then there's going to be a subset of the general population that doesn't expire from these assaults and this barrage of many different things, because the biology in that subset will have figured out a way to inure itself or integrate with these foreign inputs. And that will be the prototype for humanity 2.0.
I always think, you know, as you're talking about this, I can almost see in the future, okay, humanity's been bombarded. Now it's survival of the fittest. You've got, you know, the 1.0ers and the 2.0ers, and it's a whole new kind of warfare that might emerge.
Yes, exactly. That's what the proaction versus the precaution debate is going to be about. There are going to be people who say, I don't want to be proactive. I don't want to cut my breasts off. I don't want to, you know, take 10 different drugs because I'm being told that one of them will successfully help me with my whatever, diabetes or anemia or whatever it is. And the others will say, you must. And then there's going to be, of course, as we've seen already in the vaccine community, when parents don't want to vaccinate their children, they become outcasts and they become accused of endangering the entire population, when actually the principle should be that if the vaccines will work and actually will save you, then there should be no worry about people among you not being vaccinated, because you shouldn't even be in danger. You know, but so people don't think in these very logical ways. They just accept some kind of soundbite that's constantly being put out on television. And I've seen ads for the adult pertussis, which is whooping cough vaccine, and they show you, you know, an older woman, a grandma with glasses, holding and rocking a little baby, and they show you the mother of the baby. And so they depict a family around an infant, and they say that if all the adults in the family are vaccinated against pertussis with the adult pertussis vaccine, then that protects the baby.
God. Yeah, as you're saying all these things, I just keep thinking, you know, environmental factors mutate genes. We know this. So as you're speaking, I just keep seeing this 2.0 new man look, who's a weak, kind of emaciated, genderless, unattractive, almost kind of like a scary being with a short life expectancy. It's kind of spooky.
Well, it's already happening in the males. The males, you know, my own personal theory is that because males are bigger and stronger in physical ways, they are actually more fragile in their endurance. Women, it's already been known for a long time that women have more endurance and can actually handle some stressors better than men. But the brawn of the men reduces their toughness in terms of endurance, and therefore that has been deployed against them, and they are far more susceptible to damage from vaccines. They have a much higher risk of autism. It's actually true that all human fetuses remain female in appearance until the 7th week of pregnancy, when the job of the Y chromosome, if they have been conceived and are male on conception, meaning if the sperm carries the Y chromosome instead of an X, because sperm are either carrying X or Y. The female egg is always X, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
So females are XX because of the X in the sperm, if it's a female carrying sperm, and then males are XY. So the job of the Y chromosome is to draw out from that female form the male characteristics the male brain, the male gonads. And if the environment in the womb is not correct, because you need a very precise balance of everything to make something happen biologically.
Well, and I just have to interject, exposure to certain hormones while in the womb play a role in fetal sexual orientation and sexual differentiation. So if you're being bombarded by these things that are in our environment, it can exaggerate these effects.
Well, definitely. If they're in the mother's bloodstream, if the mother uses, you know, personal care products that are laden with phthalates and xenoestrogenic chemicals, then what is being given to that baby boy inside her but feminine influence? So the X influence is much higher than the Y, and the Y chromosome cannot finish the job and make a complete male. So this is why I think we're getting this very high rate of miscarriage of male babies, because the body rejects and says, this isn't going to work. Or you get this hermaphrodite child, and that's also going up. And that's one reason why we have the transgender thing going on.
Well, statistically, those children are being born more with two sexes.
Right. Or you end up with males that are homosexual because they're just not completely male yet.
Well, they didn't get that surge of testosterone that they needed to really give them that guy brain.
Right. So you're seeing, even among our already born generation, I'm quite a bit older than you are, but men in their 40s and 50s are losing their hair. They're developing breasts. They have real puffy tissue on their chest. I've seen this. I see it all the time. And that is called gynecomastia.
Yep.
And it's a feminization. It's a trait of having been made more feminine. I mean, I hate to say it.
I interviewed a holistic, if you could believe this, plastic surgeon. She puts people back together, and she said she sees a lot of that, guys coming in who want the breasts removed.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And little boys. It's happening to little boys too. You know, they're at 8, 9 years old. The whole age of puberty is dropping. And my lay studies clued me in many years ago that is triggered by critical body weight. So when you are fed cheeseburgers and lots of milk and also foods that are hormone laden, I mean, look at a cow, please. It's enormous. And cow's milk is supposed to make a cow big and strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I was caught at a crossing once in my car, and I watched these school children cross the road. It was in La Jolla. And I thought, oh, this must be a field trip. And then I realized how chubby all these children were. They were about 10 or 11. And I said, this must be a field trip for fat children. And then it dawned on me, no. This is just a bunch of kids crossing the road, and they're all fat. And that's the way kids are now.
It's horrible.
It's absolutely horrible. But anyway, so the children are attaining maturation sooner than they did back in the 1900s, for instance. They are developing sexual interest sooner because all of this is tied together. When they reach that critical body weight earlier in life at 9 rather than 15 or 16 as they once did, girls will get their periods. Boys who have a heightened interest in sex, this is part of the whole sex differentiation. Girls have a higher interest in nurturing. Men have a higher interest in aggression and sexuality. So the boys will be more sexually interested, and everybody will want to reproduce earlier because it's part and parcel of the whole development, and it makes sense. And I honestly think, I don't know if the body weight trigger was actually planned, but my thought is, if children become interested in sex earlier, as you can see with Common Core, introducing posters of all kinds of stuff, you know, how to, I mean, I've seen horrible things.
Me too. I don't know how parents say that that's okay. They don't pull their child out of school immediately. It just shocks me.
Well, I don't think they have very many options other than to homeschool. And then that means one of them has to stay home or they have to pay somebody to do it. I mean, it's a big life change. And so maybe they're just turning a blind eye. But to get back to what I was saying, if the children develop their sexuality and they get into puberty earlier and display curiosity about sex, then, and the pedophiles want to have sex with children, then boom, they're going to start saying, well, we should just introduce the pedophiles to the children. This is natural.
Yeah. And now they're saying, oh, but gender, what is gender? That's also a social construct. Everything's a social construct anymore. Do you notice it? Nothing is based in nature and the earth and things that are natural that we can see before our eyes.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the public will just believe what they see on television. So as long as people allow themselves to have that mind control channel in their lives and pass on the quote-unquote knowledge or information, then we're just going to see this expand.
Well, I have to ask you, because we see most of this happening in the West, but do you see this spreading like a disease across the globe? Because everyone gets the same TV shows nowadays.
Well, you know, I am not all over the globe, but I'll tell you this. I have heard that the Philippines was a trial ground for feminization of men. And the U.S. has put military bases on many islands. Just think about it. You hear all over the place, I was a military brat, my father was stationed in Guam or wherever, Tahiti. I mean, they've got these bases on all the islands. That's part of island biology. And the principle of island biology was a big deal, in the 40s and 50s before they stumbled on this microbiology. Biologists were population biologists. They studied populations. They were particularly interested in islands because populations on islands were separated by the ocean, by water, from intrusion, from influx and outflux. So island biology, if you put military bases on islands and then you conduct social and biological experiments on the people of those islands, then what do you have? This is perfect. You can develop, you can, you know, start employing what you get from these experiments elsewhere. And that's what we're seeing now all over in our culture, but it was started on these islands.
Interesting. Did not know that.
Yeah, island biology. I truly believe that the bomb was saved for Hiroshima and Nagasaki because Japan was an island. And the principles of island biology would apply for a while there. They would get to observe a population that was cut off by water and that was very dense and very interconnected respond to this radiation experiment. In fact, I ran into someone who's Japanese, whose father spent his entire life recording, that was his job, this kind of data, how the Japanese population was responding after the effects of the bomb. And when I mentioned this to him, he just clapped his hand to his forehead and he said, you know what? He said, that's exactly what my father was doing. That was his job. And he was very depressed by it. So we've seen this used in a major way already, and there was no reason for it, remember?
Yeah.
It wasn't part of war strategy. That was already done. Japan had already surrendered.
So what kind of damage do you think may occur to the Earth if this kind of synthetic onslaught takes hold on a grand scale? What kind of things do you think are going to happen?
Well, again, if you use the word damage, you're actually coming from the precautionary group. The proactionary group would say, my God, this is great. We're going to save the earth because the earth is already dying. I would say that what is the word effect might be a better word in this case. What would the effect be? All right. I believe personally that the drought in California has been engineered and that ultimately it will be foisted on California farmers, big and small, to start growing drought-tolerant crops. These crops have already been developed by the big companies, chemical companies, Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta. They already have these seeds. And the public will stamp their feet and say, it must be done, it must be done. We have a drought. Stop using up all of our precious water that we want to flush our toilets with and shower with on these crops. It makes complete sense. So the farmers who refuse to plant GM seeds will go out of business. And the big farmers who will be all over that, you know, agribusiness, will come in and take over California farmland. And California produces food not just for America, but for the world too. So there will be an integration of technology into all aspects of life to keep life going. And whether you may call that damage, I may call that damage, we will see this as unfortunate, but there will be plenty of people who see it as very fortunate and our only option.
Yeah, well, if they continue to eat that stuff, then they won't exist anymore.
Ultimately, no, but then they will rely on, I mean, it's kill you and bill you, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's a book written by a Jewish man named Stephen Fuller, and I was talking to you about this. We were chatting about it, called Humanity 2.0, and he's suggesting egalitarian policy for implementation of transhumanistic technology as it will solve the world's problems. And he's part of this trend of kind of secular humanist transhumanists. Have you heard about this?
Well, I did quote from Fuller and his sidekick, Lipinski. Is that what it is? I don't know if that's her name. I'm looking for it now.
Sure.
But, I mean, I haven't heard all the aspects of what they're dabbling in. But I'm just staggered by what I find out.
Well, he's coming from the background that we can all be made great and superior, but equally, it's this kind of techno-progressivism that's rearing its head right now.
Right. That's part of standardization. They're going to make you think that this is your chance to become equal. And you won't have disadvantages that are conferred on you by superior or inferior genes. You know, you too can live. I mean, they'll probably have a standard lifespan. It'll probably be, you know, some median age, and people will not be able to fight it. It'll be programmed death.
Oh, geez, that's egalitarian to a whole other level.
Yeah.
Well, I just think, okay, well, how would they implement this considering that, well, there's like still a couple billion people that don't even have a toilet, you know?
Well, they all have a cell phone.
Even people with no toilets?
Absolutely.
That's insane.
In India, people have access to cell phones more than they do to toilets, and then they're happy with that.
Jeez. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be connected. Lipinska, Fuller and Lipinska, Humanity 2.0.
Yeah, well, I feel sick when I spend all day on my computer without going outside. So transhumanism to me, it's not for me. Unless I had to put on some maybe high-tech suit real quick to go war some hordes of people coming to invade my space.
But you know what? I know plenty of people who don't go outside when chemtrails are being sprayed. So, you know.
You're forced to stay inside? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. They make the decision. I wouldn't spend an entire day inside unless I was sick or extremely tired or it was pouring rain or something, you know? I mean, that's part of my life, is to get outside.
So what are some things you're doing to protect yourself?
Well, I do as much as I can to make clean decisions to start with. I don't have router that's wireless. I have a cell phone, but it's turned off all the time and it's in my car and I don't use it. I use wired phone. I'm on a wired Skype right now computer. And I try to minimize, my use of electric lighting, I minimize. I have found that the less I use light bulbs at night and the more I kind of acclimate to darkness, natural darkness. In the winter, I just spend time in the evening returning phone calls, and I don't need to have the light on for that, apart from dialing the number. And I go to bed earlier, and I sleep more. And I just found out, Lana, that in the old days, people used to sleep 14 hours a night.
Really?
In the winter, yeah.
And that kind of people.
Natural sleep is called, it's biphasic. You have first sleep and second sleep. And the first sleep would last maybe 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours. And then they'd get up and they'd chat and they'd eat something. And sometimes they'd go outside and pick apples under the moon. And they'd be up for a couple of hours. They weren't all freaked out about it like we are today. A lot of people today who think they have insomnia are actually going through biphasic sleep, first sleep and second sleep. Second sleep happens toward the end of the night and you fall back asleep for 2 or 3 hours and wake up in the morning. And you're supposed to lie in bed in the morning for a while. You're supposed to have this period of quiet wakefulness. And that could easily take up 14 hours, between the time you went to sleep when it started to get dark and then you had your little wake up phase and you ate something or chatted with other family members. People would do this all the time. But
kind of sounds like my schedule.
Yes. In our modern lives, I'm saying yes as an encouragement. I don't know what your schedule is, but people in the old day, now, they think because everything is all like truncated and has to be efficient that you have to fall asleep. And, God help you if you can't go to sleep immediately. You have insomnia. You have to take a hot bath 30 minutes before going to sleep. You have to do this, do that, drink, chamomile tea and all these preparations. And then you have to sleep the whole night through. And you have to wake up 6 hours or 7 hours later to your alarm clock, pealing, jolting you out of restful slumber and dreams. And you have to get out there and be productive. But the fact is, you have to sleep with the rhythms of the Earth's light and darkness.
Yeah, I've been waking up late and I've tried to reset it many times. And I've just pretty much given up. I just got to go with the flow, with what I'm feeling, what's working for me. And if you work for yourself, you can do that.
Exactly. But, we don't. And we're stuck getting up really early. I know people who get up at 4:30 in the morning in the pitch black. I don't understand how they do it. I guess they do it because they have to. And maybe if I had to, I would as well. I remember when I was a child waking up to go to school at 6 o'clock in the morning and it was all dark and I hated it, but I had no choice. So there are ways to acclimate yourself, but the kind of society we live in with its very, regimented protocols is extremely unnatural and it's ruining us. And now with the advent of wireless connection, everybody wants to be connected.
Now, are you taking certain supplements and other herbs to counteract some of the stuff in our environment?
I take iodine. I was turned on to iodine by a friend who was a nutritionist, and that totally changed my life. And actually, I sell it on my website, avatarproducts.com. And I love iodine. I cannot tell you how it picked my body up. And maybe someday we'll do a show on iodine. But I'll tell you something. No body should be without this stuff. Even a few drops a day just makes your body sing. You just feel fantastic. And it's so cheap.
I'll have to give that a try. I take a lot of things. I feel like I have to take a lot of things just to feel pretty good. I always recommend for everybody to get like a hair analysis sample because you can test for deficiencies and toxicities because that's where a lot of your stuff is sure. coming from that you're struggling with.
Sure, yeah. Well, magnesium is very important also, and I was lucky enough to find a magnesium cream that's a phenomenal moisturizer, and it reduces all your pain and your, if you have arthritic problems or muscle pain. I mean, you just put a little bit of this cream on and boom, it goes away and your body loves it. So iodine, magnesium, and then of course, grounding, earthing, free electron transfer, if you can find a way to do that on a regular basis. These are all my little perks that I have found. And then also getting real salt into your body and getting that huge number of trace minerals, because your body really needs trace minerals. And this way you don't have to take tons of supplements that you buy in bottles in stores or online. Just trace minerals, sea salt and earth salt like Himalayan, Bolivian. There's mountain salt as well as sea salt. But all these natural salts contain up to 100 trace minerals, and your body loves them and needs them. So we must not use table salt. Table salt is bleached and stripped and put through all kinds of treatments to make it look white and snowy and pure. And it is a very, very depleted, dead food. It's not even a food. It's just sodium chloride. But real salt has so many different minerals and elements and wondrous things in it that we need it badly.
Well, last thing I wanted to talk about here, I interviewed Stephen Herod Buhner on plant intelligence, and there's much evidence that every life form on Earth is highly intelligent and communicates from plants to bacteria and fungi. It's much kind of like the Gaia hypothesis, but without the New Age contortions. So do you think that no matter how disastrous things become, that Earth can set herself right again?
I hope, but I think it's going to take help from us. Because as you said earlier, we have a different kind of consciousness. And I think we are truly metaphysical. We have abilities that we haven't known how to enable for a very long time. And we believe ourselves to be more feeble than we really are. And I think our waking up on that level is going to be what turns the tables.
But I think there's things we have to do on this level too, correct?
Well, we have to do things on this level to wake up on that level. Yeah, absolutely. This third dimension is part of our connection to the higher dimensions, but we're not using it properly. We're just using it as we are creative beings. We are beings of intention and creation, and we've become beings of reaction and response. So we are doing too much reaction and response.
How do you think we should get out of that dilemma, the reaction response?
I think we have to start setting intentions and really galvanizing our creative abilities. And you can start in any way. You can set little goals for yourself and test them on a cosmic level, you know? I mean, everybody has premonitions. Everybody has senses that so-and-so is going to call today, or you just thought of someone and then you run into them in the store, or they send you an email or something. All of this is, to me, a sign that some part of us is actually working. It is put, let's just say this, the machinery is in place, but the switch hasn't been thrown. So we have to start throwing that switch more and more and more. And once we do that and we don't react completely in fear, we realize that we are sovereign is the word. We are wondrous, but I don't know that we believe it.
I think there's a difference between there's people that react and then there's people that respond, because you have to respond. It's just like when the government sends you some notice, if you just are quiet about it, you're almost complying to it. Whereas you have to respond to certain things that happen in life.
Well, sure. I mean, I'm just using these words in a general sense. But our intention, our creativity, we're not using that enough. you know, and the New Age people always do say this thing, and I don't find fault in it, but they say, I'm going to put out there that I need to meet so-and-so, a certain kind of person to help me do a certain kind of thing. And you know what? That has actually happened to me. I have stumbled into exactly the right connection or exactly the right thing that I was looking for, if it isn't a person. And it just happens. And we have to celebrate all of that, and we have to do it more and talk about it more. And somehow, I don't know exactly, because, I mean, obviously I'm not there. I would save the world single-handedly.
Yeah, we're definitely multidimensional, so maybe it's even you reaching out to another you somewhere that helps make it happen, but in the end, it's still you.
Right. I mean, we have to believe that we are much more powerful than we have been made to think we are. I almost feel like I'm Donald Rumsfeld with his known unknowns and his unknown unknowns, and, you know, there's a sense more, and I think I was talking to Janice Barcello. I know her now after having interviewed her and listened to her interviews, and she was explaining that language itself is diabolical and satanic and full of symbols, and alphabet is a symbol. All this is very confusing to me, but if you remove language, then we really only have intention left, you know?
Yeah.
And that's our real power.
I think, too, it's important to note, because you've been talking about all these things that are happening on a physical level, but I truly believe that it's connected with the spiritual. So that's why we have to fight on the physical, because ultimately it will affect our spiritual self. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, we have to learn how to effectively refuse instead of being swept into something that everyone else is doing. I mean, making the decisions to eat certain foods rather than other foods. And I go to restaurants, and sometimes I don't have anything because there is nothing for me to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't mind going through an entire day and bringing my own food with me because I like my own food better. But I know people who will hop into a 7-Eleven and buy some horrible something. They'll then stop at Starbucks. They'll get a sandwich here or there, and they won't even bat an eye over what could be in the food they're eating.
Yeah, I rather starve. Anytime I go on long plane rides, I pretty much starve if I can't bring food along, because I just feel really sick if I eat any of that stuff.
Right. Same with, you know, going to work, and if you have to be at somewhere for the day, I just always have my nuts and my little bottle of water, and, you know, we have to just learn to do with less.
Yeah.
The body doesn't need to eat every 2 hours.
No.
You know, you have to eat 6 small meals during the day. That is a complete idiocy.
It's funny, now that I've gotten into these topics more, I don't eat that much. I feel like I'm kind of filling up on other things. It's interesting.
That's right. And when you eat less, you actually are more alert. When I eat food, I become sleepy, especially if it's a large quantity. So I really only eat one meal a day. That's enough.
And you're a tiny little thing too.
I know, that's true. But I do a lot of exercise, so I have to get calories. But you know, I mean, big people could also eat one meal a day. In the wild, I don't think they grazed. There wasn't that much to eat. I was just going to say you had to kind of find your food, come upon it, and then use it, eat it, and then wait till you found more. And sometimes you don't find it every 2 hours.
That's right. You sound like you're speaking about the paleo diet.
I guess so.
The diet of our ancestors, cavemen, women, they had some berries, they had some meat when they could kill something. Fruit is not something that they could get year-round all the time. That's a luxury. Grain, yeah. Definitely not grain.
Well, again, I never tried the paleo diet. I wasn't alive then, but I have figured out something that I can do now that seems to work, and it doesn't involve huge quantities of food, which other people seem to be, you know, a little bit surprised at.
Sophia, please give us your websites and any other info you'd like to share.
My primary website is aboutthesky.com, referring to the sky above our heads. Not this guy. Somebody that thought that's what it was. aboutthesky.com. And then I also have a store link there, and my store website is Avatar Products, A-V-A-T-A-R, products with an S, .com. And I really encourage people to look at the cell phone shielding cases there, the other products that I have, the information cards. I've printed over 500,000 of them. They're very easy to hand out on different subjects. And, of course, iodine, magnesium. And I have a podcast page. I love doing podcasts now myself, and that is on aboutthesky.com. There's a podcast link. And then I have a newsletter that is actually a private newsletter, but if you are interested, you can write to me to subscribe. And there's a newsletter tab on that website. You can read a few samples.
Great. Well, thank you. It's been a blast.
Really? Well, I've had a blast too. This has been very enjoyable. I knew it would be. And I hope I can sound as upbeat as you when I tell people how dreadful things are.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
A lot of people have a problem with Herbert Spencer's idea of the survival of the fittest, but why? It makes sense that in the struggle for life, only those organisms best adapted to existing conditions are able to survive and reproduce. And I'm not talking about traitor capitalists who stab their folk in the back, but I am talking about being wise and cautious with your lifestyle choices so you're strong to withstand the horrible existing conditions both physically and mentally. So be conscious of what you put into your body, on your body, and in your surroundings. A strong, clean body will provide a strong, clean mind. We live in scary times, and I could already see how people are mutating physically from the GMOs, chemicals, nutritional deficiencies, and God knows what else. I can see a clear distinction between those who are conscious of their choices and those who are not. We are being tested, and the weak will be weeded out. And I am okay with that because nature responds when the scales need to be balanced. There are many of you who understand the rampant agenda to destroy Western nations, but then turn around and defend the FDA, pharmaceuticals, biotech, genetically modified organisms, and fluoride. Yet these things are greatly helping to destroy the health of white people and our fertility rate. While some ideas may have had good intentions in the beginning, today these ideas have been hijacked by corporate interests. Corporations who have no allegiance to folk in the pagan way. At this time, we need not only fit awake minds, but fit and capable bodies who can be part of the resistance, the rebellion from humanity 2.0. Well, up next, I have Frank DeSilva and Matthew Buckley. And of course, radio314.com is my website. Have a good night.